Welcome to the Escape Collective Tour Dailies, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz. It was stage 8, right?
Yep, stage 8. I think we got it wrong yesterday and said stage 6 a lot.
I think we did.
It was stage 7, today stage 8. The problem is, on Monday it's a rest day, and so far the dates and the stages have been lining up numerically, so it should have been easy to track, but after the rest day, it's all going to get messed up.
We're going to get it wrong a lot, so yeah. It's best if you just know what stage we're talking about, and we just go from there. That's really ideal. That's Johnny Long, you just hear. Welcome, Johnny.
Hi, I'm here again. Haven't gone anywhere.
Nope, it's going to be the three of us for a little while here. And Ian Trellor, Ian, will you set the scene for me this evening, including the just general assessment of us
from the people around us? Damning. the general scene, we are in a square in Limoges. In a restaurant that I have eaten at before. In fact, I think we've
all three of us last year.
It's a relatively nice. Is it a brasserie? Do we call this a brasserie?
It is a brasserie.
Considering it's a brasserie attached to a Mercure hotel.
Yeah, and the genius of that is there's free Wi-Fi for guests, which we are not, but we're taking advantage of it. Since last time we were here, there's a big carousel that is broken just to the left of us.
Sad.
Which is sad, but it gives me all of the good vibes of Limoges from last time, which, granted, might have been drunken. In the immediate surrounds of us, there's a table of people that are dressed a little bit fancier than we are.
Significantly fancier than we are.
We look like we've been at the Tour de France on a very hot day, where we got lost on our way to the finish line trying to find the team buses and things, and just walked up some very big hills, getting progressively sweatier, and then finally arrived just as the finish happened. So that's a little bit of how the sausage was made. But where the sausage is made is in Limoges, which is where we are now. Limoges. Limoges.
Well, the number one story of today is, well, it's a pretty obvious one, I think. Mark Cavendish is out of the bike race. We're going to get to who wins. Mads Pedersen deserves a mention and a chat, but let's be honest. This is one of those unfortunate days where the individual who wins the bike race is, sorry, Mads, a second-tier story, because Mark Cavendish is out of the bike race.
I think that's an unnecessary shot at Mads Pedersen.
It's not his fault.
Especially considering he's a large individual with a spicy temper sometimes.
That's true. But it's not his fault. It just is the reality. I feel kind of bad for him, but it is what it is. Let's start with Cav. So what happened?
Well, what happened? I mean, we didn't see it happen on the TV cameras. There was sort of a... It's just one of those things where the bunch tightens and then there's like riders squeeze their brakes. It like ricochets, pulsates through the peloton. Yep. And at some point, someone's neither not paying attention or is not ready to sort of get out of the way. And one thing leads to another. Someone crashes it. Leads up with a few guys on the floor. Usually everyone gets back up and everyone's fine, but then sometimes it'll be one of those freak things where maybe you're not going fast enough, so you really hit the deck, which Mark Cavendish did, broke his collarbone. He's at the hospital in the Peyregoudes. Out of the Tour de France, his last Tour de France.
No, Perigot.
Perigot.
Peyregoudes is all the way down in the Pyrenees.
Okay, well, I need to update. I need to update an article though.
I think Perigot, which is not too far from here.
Okay. Well, yes, he's in the hospital somewhere.
He is.
And he should be okay, whether this is his last Tour de France. I mean, the funny thing about Cavendish is, and his sort of longevity, is that even though he said he's retiring at the end of this year, the manner in which he's crashed out, people within the peloton are already being like, oh, he'll probably be back next year.
People within this podcast.
People within this podcast.
I think it. I think there's a decent chance that he just comes right back.
Well, the fortunate thing is that he did it the day after coming second, and he would have won had it not been for a mechanical. So if there's any time to crash out the Tour de France, it's directly after that happens.
Well, it makes it particularly sad, I think, because yesterday for everybody was sort of confirmation that he can do this and came unbelievably close. And honestly, that proximity to it makes this whole thing even more sad for me, I think. And you know, we've talked enough on this podcast. Like, I think that most listeners will probably know that none of the three of us are like massive Mark Cavendish fans, and that's definitely because he's he's like never treated a lot of the press particularly well, and so like why would we be? But you can still sort of separate the man and the athlete, right? And I think all of us are hugely impressed by the things that he's done as an athlete, and I'm a fan of him as an athlete, and I think that it's sad that he came so close yesterday and then 24 hours later is sitting in the back of a van on the way to the hospital.
Even if you're not like best mates with someone, it doesn't mean that you want to see them injured or their dreams like smashing into a million pieces. You know, he's a human, he's got family, he's done a lot for the sport. Everyone in the peloton likes him.
Yep. So I mentioned this in my story today that I think he's like a pro's pro, right? And they talk about this in lots of different sports where the pros that the other professionals sort of admire, yes, they have a lot of talent. Yes, they are able to sort of, you know, act under pressure and all the rest. But it's also generally the guys that worked really hard to get there as well. Like we were talking with our friend Josh Robinson of the Wall Street Journal. And he wrote a book that was focused pretty heavily on Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. And granted, for any non-soccer football fans, this is not going to make a whole lot of sense. But basically what he was saying is that Ronaldo is like the pro's pro, and other professionals have a huge amount of respect for him because they feel like he worked harder to get to that sort of potential GOAT status, right? Oh... I don't think you could hear that on
the round of applause at the restaurant for the largest amount of glass crashing I've ever heard in my life.
That was a lot. I don't think you can hear it on the mics, but interrupted a little bit.
There are some very happy people in Limoges about that.
Anyway, my point being is that this direct comparison, so the Ronaldo Messi thing, a lot of sort of fellow professionals view Messi as this like weird, like born with it kind of talent versus Ronaldo, who worked his ass off to get where he is. And I think that Cav is in very much sort of the Ronaldo side of things, right? Like he's the greatest sprinter of all time. There's no question about that whatsoever. But he did not necessarily do that with sort of pure born with it talent that was going to get him there. And we've seen this over and over again. I mean, his career, more than any other sprinter I can think of, has just been this up and down and up and down and up and down. And he fights back. And you have to respect anybody who does that.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's, you know, for the next day we'll probably hear, or actually until we start tomorrow for the Puy de Dôme, but the whole of today's news has been dominated by Mark Cavendish, as it rightly should be, because if this does turn out to be his last tour stage, then... if he's going to end on this in this manner, then
it's a bummer.
You got to, you know, everyone's got to pay tribute. Everyone spends time thinking about it. He'll have other like final races, like goodbye races, but it's not the same as if he'd won a stage and then had a final procession on the Champs-Élysées, where he like tries to win another stage, but also, regardless, he does like another lap or something like that, and it would be magic.
Yeah. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back. I really wouldn't be surprised if he came back. But man, it's a lot of work to get to this point. I mean, to get to the point where he is contesting for tour sprints, it's a half year of work, you know. I'm not entirely confident he wants to do that again. I wouldn't put it past him, but I'm not. He said he's done. So,
at this point, Ineos Grenadiers say they're still riding as a GC team, still like laying the groundwork for Egan Bernal or Tom Pidcock to make that next step, but they've got enough money and probably enough squad space, because there's a lot of guys leaving at the end of the year. Why not just give Cav one of those spaces and a spot in the tour team, and like a guy like Connor Swift, or I'm trying to think of who else they could have, but just give him that one more chance. That'd be a more fitting send-off than at Astana, because that was the thing that kind of got everyone's goat when he signed for Astana, was that if he does win the number 35, it's going to be in the Astana Aquamarine of Skullduggery.
Of Alexander Vinokourov. Yeah.
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 Who I filmed from stage 7 when Cavendish was going back to the bus, and I missed this, but when I posted, people were replying, letting me know that Alexander Vinokourov tried to fist bump Mark Cavendish after he'd got back after like losing a devastating sprint. Obviously, Mark Cavendish didn't reciprocate, so Vinokourov just like fist bumped Cavendish's bike's handlebars. So if you haven't seen that, it's in the story on the website or on my Twitter. It's where if you in need of a pick me up at any point over the next however many months, and just to remind yourself that everything's okay, just go back and watch that video and just see the sort of like part of the soul of Alexander Vinokourov that's still left leave his body.
I was not surprised, but there was a lot of positive chat from the rest of the peloton today. kind of going back to what I was saying, he's a pro's pro. Some really nice words from like Dylan Groenewegen, who was actually up on stage with him at the sort of initial press conference stuff in Bilbao, and it said at that point that he was the greatest of all time and was still the greatest. Groenewegen said that again right before Ian, you pissed him off.
I did. There's been a lot made about me coming into this tour as the friendship tour, trying to make friends with little friends along the way. And I think today I might have made my first enemy when he answered some questions. Dylan Groenewegen answered some questions about Cav and said very nice things about him. And I thought that it was fitting to, after talking about one sprinter that was a rival, for him to maybe talk about another sprinter that was his rival. So I asked whether Jasper Philipsen is on a different level to everybody else at the Tour de France this year.
That's a reasonable question.
Which I thought was a fair enough question, seeing as he's won 3 out of 4 of the sprint stages so far.
And won how many, like 2 last year.
I think you're just...
And Dylan Groenewegen hasn't really been all that close.
I think you're a big meanie, no. Ian.
Anyway, so Dylan Groenewegen gave me a kind of death stare and then said, well, he didn't win today, did he? And then went into the bus.
He clapped back at you in a different language.
Well, it was English.
But a different language to his native...
His
tongue.
Second language.
Yeah.
His second
language. Yeah, so I felt that I had disappointed Dylan at that time. And
I feel the same.
I don't feel remorse.
No, good.
I would do it again.
Maybe you should
Maybe
tomorrow.
I will. just see who finishes first on Puy de Dôme and then see whether, again, Jasper Philipsen has proven himself the superior bike rider.
Lots of other positive chat from the rest of the peloton. Everybody we talked to had interesting things to say, I think. And again, I don't want to make this like the Mark Cavendish love episode.
Yeah, especially when like me personally also spends a lot of time like knocking him.
Yeah.
But there's a time and place, isn't there? Like you can be critical, but it's like you're not critical of someone right after something bad has happened to them. Like that's not the time to like stick the boot in.
No.
Look at you with your normal human empathy, Johnny.
I've been learning a lot this tour.
No, and like I said, he deserves, regardless of whether you're a fan or not, he deserves
respect. You'd have to he probably would agree. You don't have to like him. You just have to respect him.
Yeah.
The one thing I did think, though, with the tributes in the peloton is that a lot of these guys, because Cavendish has such a long career, wouldn't have been racing against him. Cavendish admits himself in the past when he was a bit more feisty with everyone. And also these guys, the younger generation, they were watching on TV when he was winning his first tour stages and loving that. So then
2010,
it's always going to be framed differently. Yeah. Cavendish is going to see them in a different light to his own like peers. So that's a bit of context to put into it all.
Yeah, Jasper Philipsen was asked about that in his press conference yesterday after he won the stage. I found it a little bit funny. I think he kind of caught himself about halfway through basically calling Cavendish old. And was trying to like figure out how to get work his way around in this answer that he was giving to make it sound less like he was just calling Cavendish old.
He's not old; he's young at heart.
Philipsen often finds himself in these sort of linguistic quandaries where he starts trying to tell the truth and then remembers where he is, and he's actually not supposed to tell the truth about things and has to work his way back.
And the answer to the question just gets longer and longer and longer and longer he attempts to find his way around. He was just totally lost in explaining how Mark Cavendish was the greatest, but is the greatest. And back then, when I was watching him, when I was a little small child, is basically what he was saying. But also, he's not old yet, and also, he's definitely not done. And
also, we're not giving away victories, but I love him, but I don't, but I do.
It was very entertaining to listen to. He kind of brought it around, but you could see the gears turning in his head, which I enjoyed.
Should we talk about who won the bike race?
Yes, let's talk about who won the bike race.
Mats Pettersson. Mm. And he did it as the result of a pretty spectacular team effort where all of
Little Trek is objectively funnier.
It is.
Yeah. Which is?
Little Trek.
Mm.
I sort of split the difference. Anyway, Little Trek... To bring things screaming back off this tangent, it was a team effort. The lead out was really well executed from about 5 kilometers to go. What I thought was impressive about Lidl Trek's efforts were was the fact that it was really pretty much everybody on the team that was working for a common goal.
It was good.
Including Skelmosa, who a couple of days ago was complaining about a back that was so bad that he felt like a 90-year-old.
Yeah, very specific.
Very specific, and also that's not a good way for your back to feel when you're 22. that's quite...
So how does he know? What's his frame of reference there?
Maybe he's got a grandma or something.
He still can't feel what her back feels like.
Well, he was a very nice young man, so maybe I'll ask him whether he knows what his grandma's back feels like tomorrow and just bring the friendship tour back on track. And there was also some work from Alex Kirsch. It was quite impressive. There were a lot of little tracks all working to get Mads Pedersen across the line first.
And he ended up having to do a really long sprint anyway because it was such a hard run in. He went probably, 30, 40 meters before he would have liked, but he was able to hang on. And he said in the sort of post-race kind of grab thing that it doesn't matter whether you win by, I think you said 2 meters or 2 centimeters, something like that. Don't remember exactly. 2 millimeters. Doesn't matter. It's the Tour de France. You still win. And he managed to hold off Jasper Philipsen, who was coming on pretty fast.
Little Trek's press officer, Love Island Jacob.
Hi, Love Island Jacob.
Hi, Love Island Jacob.
Do we need to explain that?
No.
No.
Okay. No.
If people want to know, then they can ask on the Discord.
Ah. Ooh, this we could explain this on the special members-only podcast that's coming on Monday.
Yeah. People might know as well. It was only last year.
Yeah, but you know.
I think we explained it. Well, yeah, true.
There's anyway, lots of new folks out there.
There are new folks. Little Trek press officer, Love Island Jacob, he bought Mads Pedersen as a present for winning the stage a pair of Lidl swimming shorts that Mads Pedersen could then wear in the paddling pool / ice bath at their hotel. He sent me the video of it, told me that, yeah, he bought them as a present. But my follow-ups are, so he went to a Lidl in between the stage finish and getting to the hotel. I need to that clarified. And I also need to get clarified if he'll be expensing the present. Because how does that work? Is that sponsorship money from Lidl being used to buy Lidl products? And should this be investigated by a public authority?
What I would believe
He's
that
not
that
replied
would be
to my messages.
What that's going to be referred to in the Lidl Trek ledger is an internal recharge, Johnny. And what that means is that money from one part of the organisation, say marketing, gets shuffled into another pot within the organisational accounts. No money is actually changing hands because all of it comes from the same big pot. It's just a way of making the books make sense. And also,
Are
he hasn't
you an
bought
accountant?
Him a present. That's bullshit. At no point has he bought him a present. Somebody in Lidl has found some board shorts and just been like, hey, give those to Mads Pedersen. That is all that's happened there. I don't believe this story. That is just an attempt from Love Island Jacob to make something go a little bit viral. He wants you to take that, put it on our socials, and boost the message that Lidl is a great and fun supermarket, which I don't think it is.
Wow.
This is capital J journalism happening before your eyes.
I think it's more of an op-ed.
Before your ears.
I like how I spend like 20 minutes of a podcast episode being positive about Cavendish, and then Ian storms in and steals the usual cynic role from right under my gaze. And I appreciate it because it lets me live a more fluffy existence.
No, I think that they've done a good job today. And normally I like Love Island Jacob's work. And I'm not
today.
I'm not normally going to object to Mads Pedersen doing a little funny video for the camera. But let's call it what it is.
I would like it if he took a bath in his little swimming trunks, but in like a paddling pool filled with oil and like decaying sea life.
From the
produce of the other petrochemical sponsors that Mads Pedersen had been racing against today.
That's wonderful. I'd like it if he did all of that scene exactly the same, but in the middle of a branch of Lidl.
Yes, just, yeah. We are available.
It
for
is absolutely doing my head in that you two are pronouncing the same word differently. Can we pick one?
And just imagine how the listeners feel. maybe, because people are asking about this, and maybe this is the perfect workaround, is that it's Lidl Trek and Lidl Trek, and then eventually one, everyone decides on one, and then that's how it goes.
Can I go Lidl?
You could go Lidl, but that Ian finally looks exasperated, which is a mean feat.
I'm doing it. Lidl Trek.
Lidl Trek sounds like he plays cornerback for a not serious university somewhere in the West Pacific.
I'm sticking with it.
Okay.
We're doing it. I'm going to bring it back around. Mess Peterson has been given his due. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Lytle Trek. We're very proud of you. And it was really a pretty impressive team effort. I would say that the Philipson sprints have also been really good team efforts, but largely sort of Matthew Vanderpool efforts. And this was more of a whole team lead out. We have a plan. We executed. It was truly impressive. But I do want to bring it back briefly to Cavendish and this record. So I think it is worth saying out loud, first and foremost, that being tied with Eddie Merckx for a record is pretty good. Yeah?
It's pretty good.
But I think he wanted 35 pretty badly. So here's the follow-up question. Is there anybody else in the Peloton today that stands any chance of coming anywhere near eventually surpassing this record?
He joked about it the other day when he won his 10th stage at the age of 24. But Tadej Pogacar, since his first tour in 2020, each complete tour, 2020, 2021, 2022, he's won three stages in each. But on stage six, he won his first stage of this year's race.
Yep.
He's still got a bunch of stages to go, and we're not even in the mountains yet. And Jumbo seem like they're just going to, if the race keeps developing how it is, they're going to be mopping up all the breakaway riders. They might not get much. They will get chances on some days, but there'll be a lot of chances for stage victories. So he needs, so Tadej Pogacar would need to win three stages minimum a year for 12 years. Okay, now it's sounding a bit mad. But he would only be early 30s by then.
Yeah.
And it's Cavendish possible. Is what? Mid to late 30s now?
It's possible. I think that the only way that Pogacar would have a chance would be if he stuck a couple tours in there in the middle with more in the kind of like 5-6 stage win kind of realm.
If like
because that's what Cav had.
Yeah,
right?
Finger go, like, say he crashes out next year or this year or whatever, and then he's just like, right, I'm going to go win this summit finish because I can outclimb everyone.
Or if Finger Gord retires prematurely and then Jumbo Visma goes all in on Wout van Aert, who is on 9, and then Wout van Aert, instead of being a lead out man and I don't know, like a mountain domestique, it's just all the Wout van Aert show.
Just for as many stages as possible.
And
to
then
break
he
the
could
record.
Probably get 60.
Wout van Aert is 27, 28 now, I think.
Yep.
So that he is less of a window, but yeah, Pogacar, you kind of want to, at the moment, we were talking about this earlier, how he loves his racing. He seems one of those riders who genuinely just enjoys the fun of it and does it for the fun. He obviously probably enjoys getting a big paycheck, but he loves it. Maybe other GC guys don't, but it's still hard to judge how long that love is going to last. And also, if you do it out of love instead of as a job, is that harder to persist with over a longer amount of time? Maybe.
Potentially. Because, if you stop loving it, you don't really know how to continue on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was saying before we hit record that I think Peter Sagan probably has other things going on in his life right now. We just had a second instance of a drink driving issue. Some other stuff going on in Peter Sagan's life, but regardless, I think that there's some similarities in terms of, like, he just loved bike racing and loved winning for a while, and then seemed to fall out of love with it not that long ago, and hasn't really done much since. And if that's the way that you operate, and you just that's what's driving you, I think that there is a danger of Pogacar at some point just kind of pulling the plug a bit early on a career that probably could keep going. But if he just doesn't love it anymore, then he doesn't love it anymore. Or the other option is, like, if you truly love it, Valverde style, you just keep going.
After you retire, you decide to wear some brown shorts instead and just go and crush a bunch of Americans at various gravel races all over the place. And you've really got to love cycling to do that after a 20-year road career.
He cannot stop.
Yeah, it's almost too far the other way, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Ian, you have just slid a note across the table. It says, I have more color from Limoges. So what's your Limoges color?
So when I was very late getting back to the press room to write a story about Mads Pedersen winning, the reason why I was very late was because I was just watching what was happening with all of the team buses. And I had quite a lot of fun watching the DSM team bus get quite comprehensively stuck going around a corner. It was really one of those moments where you just get a good glimpse of many different levels of man. You had an older man, just like a stranger, just coming through the gap and like trying to direct it in that way that old dudes do. You know,
that's dad
just
stuff.
Back her in. Yep, she'll be right. Bus driver, very stressed looking bus driver because his mirror was about to smash through the Cofidis bus's window. Then to add chaos to the mix, you had Brian Kirkard, the Cofidis sprinter, coming out and just getting involved for, I don't know what he thought he was contributing, and I don't know what relationship he might have had with the bus driver, but he was trying to pass his child through the window to the bus driver whilst all this was happening.
That's how I get my child places.
And then the bus driver had to reverse. Keep in mind that there's roughly like 5,000 people in this very narrow street.
It was so crowded today.
So packed. All around the bus, behind it. Buses are very big, and I don't imagine that their rear view, like their rear vision, would be that great. No. So he's then trying to reverse down a crowded street filled with fans and riders and other team buses. Meanwhile, there's another DSM staff member standing there on the steps, just like sadly eating an icy pole.
It was great.
He had an icy pole. You'd probably call it an ice lolly or something.
What? We call them freeze pop.
It wasn't a freeze pop. It was on a stick.
It's like on a stick. An ice lolly.
An ice lolly.
Well, you call it an ice.
An ice lolly.
What did you call it?
Icy pole.
Icy bowl.
Pole.
A popsicle.
That's weird. Popsicle?
Yeah.
Icy pole.
So anyway, a DSM popsicle. Staffer, not helping in any way. Just sort of standing there with the door open, just looking out, eating an icy pole.
An icy pole.
Icy pole.
I'm sorry. I'm stuck on this.
That's the weirdest one. That's weirder than popsicle.
Popsicles.
Ice lolly.
It's not a lolly.
Because it's like
though.
A lollipop.
It's not.
It's an ice lollipop. It's just shortened.
And a popsicle is a pop, like a lollipop icicle.
No, but the sickles come popsicle. From some weird.
From icicle.
That's weird though. Okay, anyway. No one
anyway,
can,
we're
no one
losing sight of the fact that DSM bus nearly crashed into the car.
Yeah, you know
bus,
what would have.
Very funny to me.
You know what would have helped the DSM bus driver is if I'd driven our car into the side of the bus the other day, because then he wouldn't have had to worry about anything.
Then that wouldn't have been the worst moment of his Tour de France.
No, and the bus probably wouldn't have even been there. It would have been in the shop getting fixed. So
and the DSM team would just be riding from stage to stage?
Maybe.
Anyway, I thought it was a nice little moment that underlined how mad the Tour de France is, how there is chaos around every corner. Sometimes the corner in front in the form of a Cofidis bus, sometimes the corner behind in the form of a spectator you're about to run over.
We've tried to get in touch with the DSM bus driver.
But he's not ready to talk.
He's not ready to talk, understandably. We understand he was very stressed today. Maybe we'll talk to him in a few days, maybe not.
There will be some follow-up reporting. The key question that we want to get to the bottom of is, on the scale of a normal day at the Tour de France, is this just par for the course? Is this what his life is? And if so, how is he still going in this job? Because that seemed extremely stressful. Or maybe this was like peak stress for the DSM team bus driver.
I think I once interviewed some Quickstep bus drivers, and they seemed quite dead behind the eyes just from years of stress, where it's just like they don't want to or can't feel anymore.
I've chatted quite extensively with Biso, who used to drive the EF bus.
Okay.
And I think I've seen him around. He's a different bus driver. He drives a different bus now. I don't know what team he's at. I think his actual name is Andrea Bisogno. Don't quote me on that. I just know him as Biso. That's the Biso bus. He actually had an Instagram account, Biso Bus. Go check it out.
What I'd like to find out is which bus and which team is the best to be a bus driver for. Because they must chat, and there must be teams where that's the better one and for different reasons.
I'd like to know what the worst bus is.
And
why is it Astana?
Or Total Energies, because you just have to deal with that music all the time.
So loud. So all very day. Loud.
Would you like to pop over to our regular segment?
I would. I'm ready.
So the Mayo Sable. after stage 8 of the Tour de France from Le Bourg to Limoges, 200.7 kilometers. It's a new rider.
New rider.
73rd place.
Okay.
Up 3 spaces.
Ooh.
1 hour, 0 minutes, 43 seconds.
Tight.
Now, Kaylee, would you like nationality, team, fun fact, or serious fact?
Serious fact.
He's worn the King of the Mountains jersey at a Tour de France.
Only one? Am I allowed follow-ups?
I think you're allowed clarification. He's worn more than one jersey. It wasn't just a flash in the pan.
More than one King of the Mountains jersey?
He's had it for more than one day. Held it.
Warren Barguil.
Incorrect. Ian, name, team, or fun fact?
Team.
Cofidis.
Ooh.
No looking at the rider only, list by your landlord.
The only Cofidis that I can think... Oh.
I'm going to have to push you for an answer.
Ah, Simon Geschke.
That's correct.
Ah.
Ian levels it. It's a tie.
2-2.
2-2.
Oh, man.
I'm not coming Olympics.
I'm not going to the Olympics anymore. I made a strategic error there in going for the fact first as opposed to just the team.
You went for the Tadej Pogacar way of winning the tour, whereas Ian was much more Jonas Vingegaard.
I agree.
And that's not necessarily the way around I thought it would have happened.
I might turn it around tomorrow. I mean, it's definitely going to change tomorrow. We got a big stage tomorrow. Well, before we head over to Jose Bain and Abby, we should talk about tomorrow's stage a little bit. So, tomorrow, stage 9, Saint-Léonard de Noblat to Puy-de-Dôme. Puy-de-Dôme being the ancient... what's the right term? Defunct volcano?
Extinct. Defunct. Is it extinct? Yeah, extinct. It's been decommissioned because the costs were too high.
Extinct volcano with a sort of like a little squiggle road at the top. It's actually, if you ride, it's kind of like the Zwift one.
That is the worst thing I've ever heard on this podcast.
I don't really Zwift that often, but I have accidentally found myself in the middle of winter on a Zwift volcano, and it's like, it's like that. Less lava.
I've got my head
in
my hands.
Do you ride through the lava?
No, there's no lava at all in this one.
Because it's decommissioned.
It's been decommissioned.
Big whole thing with the council and the planning committee.
This is obviously a GC stage. It's a big GC stage. Johnny, what does it look like? What's the profile look like?
It's a lumpy day with a sprint point within the first 30 kilometers. So I guess you'll see a number of people interested in the green jersey competition getting an early move and probably also getting themselves up the road to just give themselves an easier day out. There's then 3 categorized climbs leading up to the final summit finish climb, 2 fourth category ascents, and then a third category climb. And then the Puy de Dôme starts about 12.6 kilometers from the finish, and its average grading is 7.8%. And the final ramp, which is 4.5 kilometers long, that's like after the cable car funicular thing that you can get to the top, which I'll be trying to get on tomorrow. It's 4.5 kilometers of road to the real summit, and that's at 11.5%. So it's going to be a real big day of bike racing.
Can't wait.
Neither.
Who's your pick?
I think it's also going to be a bit of a surreal day of bike racing because there are no spectators allowed on the final climb.
Yeah, it's going to be weird.
So it will be just this empty thing up a narrow path to a finish.
Well,
and then everyone will be whisked away, and there's no cars allowed up there. So there's going to be...
Well, Johnny's
going to
get up there.
Johnny, yeah, I might be the only person on
so
TV.
Just a gentle giant on the summit.
We got him his Borat outfit, and you're ready to run alongside?
Yep, and if I'm lucky, Alexis Reynard may... I don't know how to phrase this.
Give you a tap.
Yep, a tap on my merry way.
All right. I'm looking forward to the stage. It's going to be amazing. It's the first time this climb has been used since 1988. There is a fun little story from Rupert Guinness up on the site today from the last time the race went this way, if you want to go check that out. Now it is time to head over to Jose Bain. Today, Jose is honoring Raymond Poulidor, who lived and died in Saint-Léonard de Noblat. and we look at volcanoes, of course, because it's volcanoes, defunct ones. Let's listen in.
We start the final stage before the rest day in a very special place. Ramon Poulidor, the grandfather of Mathieu van der Poel, but even more importantly, the cycling champion that France so dearly loved, lived and died here. Mathieu and his brother David must have spent many summer holidays here and reconned today's stage start well before the Tour de France was even on their mind. They were probably only dreaming back then of stepping in the footsteps of their world-famous grandpa. Poupou, as he's lovingly referred to, was a rider we now would call the underdog. He's also known as the man always finishing in second place, because he did so in the Tour de France of 1964, 65 and 74. In the stage to Puy de Dôme in 1964, he came very close to actually winning the race. Jacques Anquetil was really very tired that day, but poker-faced his way to the top. Poulidor didn't know that he could have beaten his French rival there and then. And in the end, there were only 55 seconds between the two in Paris. Well, today we also go to the Puy de Dôme, so let's do a little geology again, courtesy of GeoTDF. We climb to 1,465 metres. It's a 13.3 kilometer long climb with an average gradient of 7.7%. The Chien des Puits is a nearly 40 kilometer long chain of more than 80 monogenetic volcanoes. It hosts clues of human occupation since the Stone Age, and the park is listed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site since 2018. Monogenetic volcanoes are small and short-lived volcanoes. Once they erupt, their life comes to an end. However, they do not occur alone. Hundreds to thousands of them may group in what scientists call a monogenetic volcanic field. They erupt one next to the other. And in this way, each volcano easily becomes extinct over a week or a decade, but the volcanic field may span over thousands to millions of years. Monogenetic volcanoes reveal the structural weakness regions throughout the Earth's crust. Deep molten rock, or magma, uses these weaknesses to rise upwards to the surface. And the Chien des Puits is one of those structural weakness regions. Volcanic activity has been dated between 70,000 and 9,000 years ago, and this makes it the youngest expression of the French Massif Central volcanism. You can see some of the little volcanoes from the Panoramique des Dômes. Well, the Puy de Dôme is one of the highest monogenetic volcanoes along the Chien des Puits, and that also called on the attention for ancient spiritual traditions. There are ruins of the Roman temple of Mercury from the 1st century BC, but they were built over older archaeological sites. Also, this is where Blaise Pascal designed his experiment on measuring atmospheric pressure variation within altitude. He defeated the old conceptions about vacuum, making up a true revolution in physics.
I did not know that about volcanoes.
That was a pretty hot bit of storytelling.
We have two bits of housekeeping here. First and foremost, we're doing extra, sort of super special extra bits of Wheel Talk from the Giro this week. And we apologize for not communicating this, well, actually, really at all. That was our failure. But we've got them up on the Wheel Talk channel, the solo channel, not the main Escape channel. Now, basically the reason for this is because if we start, I know that we said everything was going to be on this channel, but if we overlap too much, basically listens start to drop off dramatically, which to us means that it's not good for either podcast. And so we try, basically the tour takes over everything. And so we're going to be doing just the Tour dailies throughout the entire Tour de France and Tour de France Femme. Unfortunately, that means that stuff like this needs to get bumped to the solo channels. So if you do want extra Giro coverage from Abby and company, head over to the Wheel Talk channel. There's a bunch of stuff from the last couple stages, and of course you get this final weekend. So make sure you're checking that out if you want your Giro coverage, in addition to obviously what Abby drops into these episodes. Second bit of housekeeping, just wanted to shout out a couple members out there who happen to be on a real big bike ride right now. Emma and Greg reached out. They are on their way. They're currently racing the Pan Celtic race, which is from Saint-Malo in France, 2,400 kilometers. That's like almost the distance of the Tour de France. There's a lot of Llandudno. It's in Wales.
Llandudno. It's where I've been there. I've cycled up that, actually. It's one of the few things I've cycled up. I went with my dad to the 2021 or 22 Tour of Britain, I want to say. I think 21. Yeah. And it's like a road that goes all the way around, like circular up to the top. And Wout van Aert was sprinting against Julian Alaphilippe in the rainbow jersey. And
that's fun.
We were at the top. It was a great atmosphere. And me and my dad turned to each other and said, we're confident that we will never see that again in Wales.
Probably not. Well, Emma and Greg, thanks for reaching out. Thanks for being members. And thanks for being podcast listeners. If you would like to be like Emma and Greg, you don't have to ride 2,400 kilometers across Europe. You can just head over to escapecollective.com/join. We have a $1 special going on this month. Yes, the first month is only one American dollar. $1, as we say.
Or other currencies do apply. One British gold coin or one European gold coin. I've got two sitting here in front of me just to remind me how insignificant scraps of metal they are, and that you might as well use it to see if you like our site. And if you hate it, it's fine, because it's £1, $1. Think about all the rest of the money in your entire lifetime that you've wasted and frittered away to no end. Maybe this dollar changes your life forever.
Good. Plus,
money's
not real.
We are also closing in fast on a rest day.
Yes.
And if you become a member before that rest day, you can slide into our DMs on Discord, ask us special little questions, and you'll get access to a members-only Tour Daily pod that isn't going to go on the general feed. Just for you.
Just for you. Actually, don't slide into our DMs, because I have like 100 DMs that I have not answered.
Sorry, withdrawn.
Put it on the... Yeah, at us. There's a special...
There is a channel in the Discord. Q&A it is thread. Under the Tour de France section. You can. There's a special place to put your questions in. Or, honestly, you could like... I would prefer you DM me on like social media or something. I'm more likely to see it than the Discord, which, again, I'm slightly underwater, as they say.
And think about it. If you're clever in the way you ask your question, you could basically get anything within reason read out on the podcast.
That's true. You want an ad for your local bicycle club?
Well, it's got to be humorous for us to read it out.
That
or
doesn't sound
interesting.
I was thinking like dull content.
we'll make the call.
I mean, don't just send us in adverts for your local clubs. That's a terrible.
Now
idea.
You're inviting ad reads.
I was
which
thinking
is not
more just. I was thinking more just getting like borderline deranged questions sent in.
We do want borderline deranged questions. Yeah. There's a bunch of great questions.
There's
already.
Great questions so far.
We can't wait. It's going to be a great episode, and it will only be going out to members. If you are not a member, you will have zero way of accessing it ever.
One of them's already a direct shot at me, so if you want any more of those, send them in, and I can just rattle them off in like a couple minutes and get them out of the way.
I can't wait. Head over to escapecollective.com/join. $1 right now. It's a big deal for us. We've made the plea. This is how we stay in business. So please head over and sign up. All right, now let's get over to Abby and the Giro.
We are back today to talk about the Giro Don. I'm just going to say it differently every time. So, stage 8, we're back to racing. We've got just one more stage to go now, only Sunday. And today was not a breakaway day, unfortunately. maybe tomorrow. There's one more chance. But it was a reduced bunch sprint won by Blanca Voss. Chloe Dygart came in second, and Liana Lippert was third for Movistar. An awesome sprint for Liana, although I think like she's got that kick on her. So unsurprised to see her up there. And I don't know if Annemiek listens to our podcast. I would hope not, because I've in the past been critical of her. Flirty Mackay was all over the race today. Off the front, attacking left, right, and center.
She was given freedom, I reckon, today. And she took it. Yeah, she's always been a really attacking rider. Like, just racing her, she just always wanted to be up the road. And she doesn't like an easy race. So, yeah, it was good to see.
I think they didn't give her much space today. There was a couple teams that were keen for a sprint. Really great ride by Blanca Voss, who had no teammates. Really, I mean, she has teammates and they were up there doing work for her, of course, but she has a reduced team with Elena Cecchini and Lorena Wiebes out. And those two would have been the ones up in the sprint had they been at the race. But Blanca Voss, what a talent. I mean, she won her first World Tour stage, her first World Tour race at Tour de Suisse on the first stage. And within a month has taken her second World Tour win.
She's always been like a talent. And I think she's just spent like the last year and a half just learning the ropes of being in the peloton. And I mean, she's learning from the best in the business, having Anna van der Breggen in the car behind you. And Chantel also, even though she hasn't been racing, she would have been vital coming to those races and giving some advice. And yeah, there's a lot of riders in that team with a lot of experience. So she's been learning from the best and just going on training camps. If you're riding at altitude with Demi Vollering, then you're going to be going pretty well after that. So yeah, it's really good to see.
Chantel back on her bike today after having a baby. Yeah.
Cool.
Tomorrow, stage 9 will be a little bit more straightforward as far as the finish. It's there's like a 7.7 kilometer long climb halfway through the day and another Cat 3 like really early in the day, like 6 kilometers into the stage or something. So super fun to start off the last day like that. And then it's basically descending and then a little bit of flat all the way to the line. It's about 30K of descent/flat. So it's going to be, I mean, if it's not a breakaway day, then it will definitely be another day that Voss could try to go for it if she's feeling a little bit better.
Do you know who I reckon is going to want it to be a sprint tomorrow? I might have a little go. Is Bastianelli. Her last ever race. So I wouldn't be surprised if she, because the climb, it doesn't look like a really, really hard day.
No, both of the climbs, the highest percent they get to is 5.9, but it's mostly like 5%, 4%. Yeah. They're really gradual, kind of not even slogs because they're not that long.
It's going to be an emotional day for her. I mean, she's been in the peloton a really, really long time, finishing in Italy as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if UAE want to do something special and do a lead out or something for her and just see, be cool to finish your last race with your arms in the air.
Yeah, 18 years she's been racing.
Wow.
With a year off
yeah.
In 2009 for a doping suspension. But yeah, former world champion. She won the world championship road race in 2007, came back to the peloton after her suspension in 2010, and has kind of been a staple in the peloton ever since then. A mom.
Yeah.
As well.
She's probably one of the first moms in the peloton.
Yeah. Hannah, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about the final stage. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening to this segment of the Wheel Talk podcast. For more information on the Giro and more of my chat with Hannah Barnes, plus audio diaries from riders in the race, like Sarah Roy of the Canyon SRAM team, Veronica Ewers of EF Education Tipco Silicon Valley Bank, Neve Fisher-Black of SD Works, Nina Kessler from Jayco Alula, and Loretta Hansen of Lidl Trek, head on over to the Wheel Talk podcast feed. There's a lot of Giro coverage over there. Only one day left. See you tomorrow.
All right, gentlemen, we're gonna wrap it up. Was it a fire?
There's a what?
Someone's having a birthday and they've got one of those big sparkler things.
Crisis averted.
Happy.
I'm not singing.
Maybe it's Phil Bauhaus. I think it's his birthday today.
It is.
Happy birthday, Phil Bauhaus.
Well, or possibly yesterday. We're not sure.
A man and also an architectural movement.
Kate doesn't get here for the third week, Ian. We're saving all the architectural chat till then.
Well, she would have hated that, so it's fine.
I think she would have liked it.
See you all in Clermont-Ferrand.
Yeah, we are going to come to you from Clermont-Ferrand tomorrow.
And the next day, and the next day, and the next day.
It's a really weird tour route. We literally sit in Clermont-Ferrand for like 4 or 5 days coming up. And it's not, if I am being completely honest, it's not where I would pick to sit for 4 or 5 days, but maybe it's going to surprise us.
I'm excited to make some more friends in Clermy-F.
Clermy-F. Can't wait. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Escape Collective Tour Daily. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for giving us great ratings on iTunes. We have a 5.0 on iTunes.
Don't say that now. That inspires.
Right. Behavior. I'll tell them what I really think.
No, more fives. We want all fives. We've said this before. You can write whatever you want.
Yes, just make five.
You can
That's
be
genius.
Mean. You can be as mean as you want. You just had to put
a five. I'd actually prefer it if you're mean.
It's kind of funny.
I need some more fire in my belly. I feel like I've got a slow start to this tour.
I'm really worried about the direction you've taken with these custom ad reads and negative reviews in the last 5 minutes, Kaylee. Say nice things. Tell us deranged questions you want answered.
Yeah. Yep. And give us a 5-star rating.
Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. Ding. All right.
Oh, God.
Thank you, everybody. Can't think of anything else. It's over.
Au revoir.
À demain.